Hello and welcome to Joshua Space, a podcast where we talk about all things books. On today's episode, I have the wonderful privilege of interviewing Jared Schusterman and Sofia Lapuente. They are co-authors to an upcoming debut novel called Retro. It is a young adult mystery thriller and it comes out in January of 2023. It's currently available for pre-order, and if you do pre-order it, don't forget to submit your receipt to the publisher for some extra free goodies. Without further ado, let's listen into the interview and hear all about Retro and the characters involved. Thank you so much for joining on this episode.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I'm excited too, because I haven't heard a lot about Retro and I know it comes out in just a few months. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about what Retro is all about?
Yeah. So we'll give you and the listeners kind of a short pitch. So Retro is about what happens if at a high school, there's a kind of serious cyberbullying kind of attack that happens to a girl, and it happens on a social media platform called Limbo. Okay. Now Limbo comes to the school and goes, you know what? We want to do a challenge to kind of fix some of these wrongs that have happened. 1 year, no technology. You're going to go retro.
Modern technology. They can use a microwave.
No modern technology. Thank you for that. No modern technology. Everyone's going retro. So they're driving old cars, listening to old music, just in that vibe. And if you can make it the whole year, you'll get the scholarship of your dreams to whatever school you want. But as this challenge starts going, students start disappearing and it becomes a thriller and a mystery. So it's this fun, you know, enjoying the retro vibes, but at the same time, things get dark, things get twisted. Maybe there's a larger conspiracy at play. You guys got to read the book to find out, but super fun. And of course, it comes with a high recommendation from us to read.
But you're not biased at all.
No bias. I heard it was great.
It's like our baby, you know. We were working retro since 2019.
Yeah.
Start with the idea, right? It's a slow process, but 2019, and then the pandemic hit, and it's been like a long, long process. So we feel like at this point, all the characters are like our best friends. We know them all. We know what they do, how they will think. If they were going right now to the, I don't know, to the street to buy some food and chat, we know how they will react. And we really want the people to meet Luna, that is our main character, and Mimi, that is her friend. And then we have Axel, that is some love interest going on there.
We have Darnell. A super cool character as well.
And Kilo.
So it's just about this big, fun group of friends. And we've like gotten to know them so much throughout these years. We feel like Luna's really a combination of me and Sophie, and also another friend that we have Luna's kind of a mix of. So it's just,
and Luna is, we need to say, she's born in America in the United States, but she's half Spaniard, half Mexican.
Okay.
So she speaks some Spanish, actually, like you. So I feel like many people is going to feel represented in, my parents speak some Spanish, I hear Spanish at home, but then I go to high school and I hear English. So is this, what is who I am, right? Like what I belong to. I think is these new generations that are asking these questions finally, and the whole world is thinking about it. So I think many people is going to feel represented.
Yeah. So is the character first generation in America?
I think we mix a lot, because I mean, you are second generation.
Second/third.
I'm not even first. I'm born in Spain. That's my accent.
She's a straight immigrant.
Yeah, I'm immigrant.
We're coming into this like really leaning into Sophie's culture, aka Luna's culture as well. Of like
Spanish culture, Hispanic people. We think that
that kind of vibe, that kind of level of joking and comedy, which I found to be just so colorful, so exciting, so passionate, fun, and direct as well. Mm-hmm. So I love it.
That's awesome. And yeah, it's not something that's represented a lot in books yet. I mean, it's starting to become more normal and it's starting to become more prevalent, but there's still very far and few between.
Yeah. And, you know, what we want to do too is like, you know, you could have a book that's just about like maybe a single issue or a single experience. Mm-hmm. But what we chose to do is let's just do a book that's really fun in general, kind of commercial and exciting that everyone can enjoy.
Absolutely.
But we're telling it through the perspective and spyglass of a Hispanic American. So that's kind of like, it's for everybody, but at the same time, no, it's highlighting this culture and that's what's special about it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So did the characters come first or did the plot come first?
I think Luna came before anything because there's a lot of Luna with me. So I yeah. just came. So I land and then I started to talk. So I think the beginning, Luna was there, but then we really thought about, we knew we wanted to talk about technology and about social media, because I think, I mean, we are part of it, right? All of yeah. us, like, we have our Instagram, our TikTok, we chat with people, we meet people. And we were like, I think that's something we all have in common.
Yeah.
And there we thought it was an important topic and a yeah. main topic to talk about. And then we want to make it fun. But at the same time, we want to show, let's make it fun, but then let's trigger you and see the dark side of it. And then make you think about it, right?
Yeah, we definitely, we don't want to trigger too hard. But, no. but we want people to be... to be excited about the fun of like the retro world, but at the same mm-hmm. time, because it's this challenge to you know, a technological diet of your modern technology, mm-hmm. Because it's that, you know, people are going to question, obviously, what is it like getting to this place without GPS, and how, you know, and it's kind of lame, right? If one person's like, I'm not using my phone, well, that sucks. But if you all do it together and your entire mm-hmm. friend group, and you all go to the mall and you're just listening to old music and doing awesome yeah. retro things, and your parents can't call you, they can't text you because you're doing whatever you want, like, it becomes cool. Like, you're not getting like spam calls from random countries or like stalked by your ex anymore online. Like, it's just, it's over. You're living the real world. And that's what's fun about it. So yeah, it's not fun to just lose your phone. It's yeah. actually awesome if everybody just does it together as a social experiment. Yeah. And then at the end of the day,
our post about it.
Yeah. At the end of the day, post about it, talk about it. Understand that technology is like the way that we all express yeah, ourselves. So we're totally excited about kind of everybody to see that aspect of the book.
Yeah,
and I think that's definitely an interesting thing to talk about, because it's in the day that we're in with technology and social media being such a main part of our lives. I mean, how many people can actually decide they want to go somewhere that's a 45-minute drive and not have a phone or GPS and just have to use a map? How many people are actually going to get there?
I try it just to get like from like Olympic Boulevard down to Venice. And she's like yelling at me, like, use a map. Cause I get lost.
Yeah, it's like, use that thing. No?
So yeah.
You did a good job in Silicon Valley. Use it.
Yeah. I try to go retro for one second. It doesn't work.
It would definitely, well, it's a challenge. Just like in the book, it's a challenge.
It is a challenge.
But I think it's worth it. You kidding me? Like going to the college of your dreams?
Yeah, the reward pays off if you're able to stick it out.
Yeah, and the whole thing is like put on by limbo. So it's like, it's always being, you know, kind of like in a TikTok way, it's always kind of being recorded, and it's like mm-hmm. this fun world, and every week there's a new challenge. Yeah. This is the handcuff challenge. This is the, you know, there's every single week there's something.
Yeah, they
new.
Need to learn different things. It's just when, you know, your friends start to disappear, you need to balance. Do I want to continue in the challenge, and do I want to try to find my friend and see what's going on? So I think we'll discover a lot of things through the characters while they are doing the challenge, right? And through that, you will see their limits, how they get pushed, and their fears. And I think that's...
But their secrets are... The
secrets,
you know,
a lot of secrets.
So
yeah,
lots of that.
What was the inspiration behind making it more of like a mystery thriller with characters starting to disappear and things starting to happen where these characters are faced with the serious decision, do I look for my friends or do I try to get the scholarship?
I mean, I think it was partly our manager and then partly, and then Sophie. We were like, we had this fun idea of the retro challenge and the retro and all of that. Mm-hmm. But then it was like-
Our manager from
the entertainment industry was like, well, what are they just gonna like hang out all the time and like just do retro stuff? Like there has to be more to it. And we're still developing the idea. And mm-hmm. Sophie is like, you know, being from Spain, they have amazing writing there. Like mysteries are on point. There's plot turns and heroes.
Every
like,
10 no seconds. If not, we get bored.
Yeah. So she came with the idea to really lean into the thriller aspect. Mm-hmm. We were able to blend it together in a way that was just so fun for us. Yeah.
And I feel like when you do a book, when you need to think like, you're competing with social media. Like, why they're reading right now and they're not on TikTok or watching Netflix? So it's like, let's do something that really is like, no, I need to keep reading this. Like, and we think that the thriller aspects can really give you that part. Like, oh, no, one more. So like, you know, when Netflix is like, do you want to continue watching?
That's us. Like every paragraph.
That's how we both. So they both.
But you know, and the way ideas never come all at once, you know, like for mm-hmm. example, we could talk about just Dry, which you've read, is Is dry was the first idea. My friend told me this concept of 3 days to animal. Within 3 days, losing water, power, whatever, characters just turn into animals. You're going to be a wolf or a sheep. And then I was driving with my dad and we were able to connect that with the California drought. And then it became something. Hmm. And, you know, with retro is very similar. We started off with this really passion to like, we want to tell a story that talks about technology because it's, I mean, you have documentaries like The Social Dilemma. You have, you have rising awareness of the amazing, you know, qualities and the negative externalities of social media. So we wanted to go into that and it slowly formed with the mystery as well.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So, cause this is the first novel you are both co-writing together, right?
Yeah.
And then Sophia, is this your first novel?
This is insane for me. Honestly.
It's insane.
It's insane. The whole thing, because we start writing screenplays together.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we worked before together. That's why people don't know. We come from the screenplay world, Hollywood world. And I thought I knew everything after knowing Hollywood that I was wrong. I enter in this book world and I had to learn a lot. He was an amazing mentor, right? Because he already, by the time I met him, he had Dry coming up. So I knew, I always like to tell stories. I knew a lot about character because I used to work in casting.
Okay.
Like I used to be a casting director. So it's not the same, but you need to know about characters for real. So I mix all that qualities with what he knows. Yeah. He speaks English better than me. Obviously, he has, you know, English grammar better than me. But I think we were able to find our way to combine what I can offer and what he can offer and make it work. And I think it's a special process, but it's a beautiful one. At the beginning, it was some conflict.
Because we had to figure out what are our roles, right? And like, what things are we going to fight on and what things are we going to let go?
Yeah.
And like, we've come up with like a process that we do. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I feel like I'll be doing sentence structure and making sure the sentence, but then often Sophie will catch me in a whole bunch of stuff too, because as English as a second language, you analyze things differently. And then she'll go and she really handles more so what are the souls of these characters and the comedy and writing through a female's perspective. Yep. There's times where I write like a kind of a romantic scene and she's like,
no way. That's not attractive at all. Yeah, I was like, no.
I thought that was attractive. You're attracted to me. So I guess it doesn't play on paper.
Yeah.
So there's things like that we learn to balance each other out and what things we'll let the other person have the final say on. But what the main thing is that we learned is there usually can't be that much conflict as long as we're being nice to each other. There can't be that much conflict when you have the rule of it has to be yes. We don't move forward with no. So if Sophie says no to something and I say yes to an idea, well, then the answer is no, right?
Yeah.
Until she's saying yes. And I'm not going to dig my feet into the sand and go, I have to get this idea forward. Mm. At some point, it's like, okay, you got to make a different chess move. You know, you got to figure something else out. And then we come up with an answer and solution that's generally always better because we came up with it together. Yeah. So it got through both of our like Venn diagrams of our brains.
Nice. So with co-writing, because I know everyone kind of does it differently, with some people writing a point of view and the other person writing the other point of view, or writing a chapter and setting it back and forth. How was your guys' process? Because it sounds like you were writing at the same time, kind of just together.
Yeah.
Together.
I will say first we talk what is the next thing coming, right? Like, let's say, okay, this character and this character are going home. They feel sad. She's going to break a glass of water, go to sleep and cry. Okay, now we have here, this is the next chapter. From there, I would say we decide a couple of things that we need to have here, how to start, how to end the thing. Some jokes or some things we want to put there for sure, jokes or something to think about it, like things that 100% they need to be there. And then we just take, how do you call it, docs?
Google Docs,
so we can be at the same time. And then we start from there together.
Yeah.
Together.
And it can be tedious because sometimes she'll do a first pass or I'll do a first pass and we go over it again and again and again and again. Mm-hmm. Usually it's the fourth time. Sometimes when we're doing things that are more mystery and thriller oriented, I think they go faster.
Yeah.
But when we're dealing with character stuff, it can be a slower process because it's really like, she's like this, I'm like this, she's like this, I'm like this. And we just blend it. I mean, we massage and knead it into our, you know, co-creation.
I would say we write slow, maybe a little bit slow at the beginning because we needed to know each other, how we were doing, and maybe other people write faster, because you will have to take one perspective, and me another one, it would have been maybe faster. But we wanted to do it in a way that you see both of us, but you can't tell where are we, because we are everywhere.
You can't tell what's what. You really can't tell what's what. But you know, for us too, we came from this kind of like more, I would say, Hollywood perspective. So when you read what we write, and maybe you found some of that in Dry Roxy, but when you write it, we try to make it feel cinematic. So you're reading this and you're just reading, it could be, you feel like you're watching it on Netflix already.
Yeah.
And we even
can
more
say
so
how, we can say how we decide to narrate the situation with Luna and the interstitials.
Oh yeah, we can.
Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean? With Luna and the interstitials?
Yeah, the way she starts the book. Let's explain to the people.
Go for it.
You go.
I don't know exactly what you want me to
okay.
say. the beat, how it starts?
How is Luna telling the story?
I don't know exactly what you want me to say.
okay, so
we're flowing.
Because the Hollywood way to Netflix. Shut up.
Oh, now I know what you're trying to get up. But you do it, you do it.
Okay, because the Hollywood way, when you read the book, you can already imagine the TV show. Like, it's really fast. And what we do is Luna is somewhere talking from the present to the past. She's explaining us how she got where she is, what happened. And then when you read around page 200 something, you will catch Luna. Luna in the present. And then you go with her until the end of the book.
So not only is it a mystery as you're going through, but you're also being like thrown into these, you know, flash forwards, and then she'll flash back.
Yeah.
And something fun that we actually did about our book is that every single chapter is the title of a retro song.
Yep.
That totally corresponds. So the playlist is coming soon, guys.
Yeah.
And as you read through, you're getting the vibe of the chapter. Mm-hmm. You're getting the vibe of what Luna's listening to, because she's narrating while she's listening to her headphones. So she's kind of taking you through the story through the soundtrack of her life.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So how was it coming up with the song title, deciding which songs were going to go with which chapters?
A lot of Spotify
and a lot of like, it's just a lot of calculation, a lot of like, these are the songs art that people are going to know, you know, because there's some songs that we like, but we don't think they're going to be as accessible. So just staying true to ourselves while also trying to be connective with everybody else.
And so, there were some songs that, you know, they're really famous in Spain, but Jared was like, no idea.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, you know, this book is coming first to the United States. So obviously it needs to be something that they know in America. So I think we find a good combination.
Yeah,
we have some Britney Spears. We have some interesting stuff.
We got Linkin Park, Britney Spears. We got Rage Against the Machine, Nirvana. We got everything for everyone.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It really adds a fun element to it.
That's awesome. I think music is fascinating, and it's amazing how much music will bring people together from all, regardless of the culture, regardless of your background, it'll bring people together.
100%.
It really does. It really does.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to see, like, when, at least when we were looking online, how many, like, certain songs have like a billion views. And it's like, wow, that for some reason, this song on YouTube, just everyone still loves it today. Like the song Africa by Toto.
Yeah. Yeah.
That song has held up, you know, and it's
in the book actually,
and we put it in the book. So it's like, it's just crazy what pops. And it was also kind of sad / crazy for us to like admit that Linkin Park is technically retro.
When you were saying Linkin Park, I was like, oh man.
I felt like just yesterday my dad like was stealing the disc of Hybrid Theory away from me because they said shut up too many times. Like he was like just yesterday that it was year 2001.
And fly is so fast, it's insane. So the other question I had for you guys was, which I have a feeling I already know the answer from what we've been talking about. Do you have a favorite character to write about?
Oh,
yeah, I have to.
Okay, you say it, same.
Okay, but I don't think it's the same than you.
I want to hear yours, so then I can go.
Okay, my favorite is Mimi.
Yeah.
That Mimi is the best friend of Luna.
Okay.
And she's, I want everyone to meet Mimi. I want to have a Mimi in my life. You know? She's really fun. She doesn't care what people think about her. Like, she doesn't even, she has pink hair. She has a, how's iguana?
She has an iguana.
Iguana. Yeah. She just loves to be herself. She loves animals. She's just a special creature, you know?
She's not afraid to, like, she, like, is so honest and such a pure soul that she'll accidentally insult you to your face with a smile because she's just doesn't mean to. You know how you have some friends like that? Like, your heart is not proportional like to your boob size. Like,
yep.
was that a compliment?
She's like that. So I really have fun riding Mimi. And then for a different thing, I love Gloria. Gloria is Luna's mother.
Okay.
She's from Spain. And it brings me this, I would say, Hispanic mom. Like, it's a different thing. Like, you know, like, I have seen, like, the food, you know, it's like maybe 100 degrees over there, but it's like, take your coat in case you get cold. And it's like, what? Mom, like, and that's how it's my mom, right? So she's really like, with the food, you need to eat, you need to eat, you need to eat. And it's like, it's 10 a.m. I don't want lentils. Like, like I'm fine, you know?
Yep.
And that's my mom. So it was like, I need that mother that really gets worried, that it smells you when you get home, like, where you been? <You know? laughs> And I had a lot of fun writing Gloria too.
And Gloria was so fun. It was great too, because, like, I feel like ever since meeting Sophie, I've learned more and more about her Spanish culture, you know, speaking Spanish now, making friends over there, going to Spain so many times. And through writing, I've learned this, like, other deeper level as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's been so fun and kind of leading me into my favorite character, right? Which is, I would definitely say Luna, who's our protagonist, because cheesy alert, so much of Luna is Sophie. So I'm a little biased. So much of Luna is Sophie. So it's like, for me, it's really fun.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to, yeah, and to get into her head and figure out what the hell is going on in there. I don't know. But it is crazy. It's crazy, like, when you write a character together, because you start learning things about each other that you wouldn't have normally known. Like, okay, in this situation, would you, like, kill that person, or would you? And, like, we have to ask each other these things. So you learn all these crazy hypotheticals and have a really cool debate.
And we like Darnell too. He's a special character. He's the best friend of Luna because he's just a badass guy.
He's
like
badass.
Rebel. He wants the revolution. He's like,
that's the revolution. He's badass. He's fun. He's gay. He's proud. He's badass. He's got a crazy awesome afro. He's always, like, riding around on roller skates, like, doing whatever he wants. He knows all, like, the cool words. Like, it's like he was retro before it was cool.
Yeah.
Before it was a challenge, Darnell was retro.
Yeah.
So he kind of, like, teaches our characters, like, what it's like to be living in that world, and it's just fun. He's a special one. So we got a whole bunch of fun characters, and, and for us it was like, we want to put the characters first, you know. I know it's definitely a jump between plot and character, but, you know, I'm more plot and Sophie's more character, and we defaulted more to Sophie on this because she was like, no, we got to create the great characters first and then let's go with the plot, and then we can, you know, manipulate the characters as you go along the plot and tweak stuff. But but we really went from that stance and it paid off. It's been fun.
Yeah.
Nice. So now that we know your favorite characters, what was the most challenging character to write?
I have it clear.
Jade.
Remember this name.
Jade.
How you come down about it?
Yeah, Jade
is being a difficult character. We build her again. She is a special one because she's the antagonist of Luna at the beginning, but she's another girl with her fears, her insecurities, her positive things. And, you know, at the beginning you think, oh, this is Mean Girls, but then it's Regina George, but she's not at all. She's way deeper, way more complicated. And I feel like it shows us at the end that you can have a enemy at the school or someone you don't like, but ask yourself, why is she behaving like that? Maybe not everyone is as, you know, secure or confident. Like, there's things, like, ask yourself why the other person is being like that before judging and put everyone in boxes. And I think Jade was the most complicated character.
Yeah, because she is this antagonist, but, like, you know, we don't want her to come off as two-dimensional, and we never thought she was, because we always had this, like, deeper, more open part for her, that you start to learn more about her, and you almost start to like her and care about her in the end, which is the most difficult thing for your antagonist.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it was our editors that brought us to, like, hey, listen, to flesh her out even more throughout, humanize her even more from the beginning. So she's not this mean girl that makes a transformation in our minds, but who's always feeling really three-dimensional. And that was a challenge for us. And it was a difficult one, but I think it was a really worth it one because
yeah, now we love her.
Because now I think you end the book. Some people's favorite character might be her, you know.
Yeah, I feel like we have this new thing now that how's it, Draco Malfoy? How do you spell it?
Yeah, Draco Malfoy.
Draco Malfoy. Okay, from Harry Potter, and it's like yeah, technically it's the bad guy, but I feel like we all love him more than Harry. So yeah. Basically, so it's this thing of yeah, he's bad, but he's not that bad, but then the really bad things he's not capable to do them. I'm not going to say spoilers in case it's someone in 2022 that didn't read Harry Potter. You should.
I haven't.
You know, okay. Why are you listening here? Go to me. like, you know, it's this kind of bad characters, but at the end we love, we adore them, and we just want to get their sweatshirts. And I feel like Jade is kind of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's true.
So yeah. Yeah. I would say yeah.
Okay. So with, because you made reference to towards the end of the novel, the character development, is Retro going to be a standalone or will we possibly get more? Is it like, will it be a series or will we maybe get more in just the world itself?
Yeah. Let's say this. It closes off.
Mm-hmm.
So there could not be a next one, but
we know what we will do in the second
one. We left the back door and even little like Easter eggs and everything yeah. set up for the next book. So yeah. we are 100% open. We're gonna think about it.
Yeah.
And but we know what we're gonna do.
We do a screenplay too. So
okay.
When you arrive, you are always thinking in season two.
Yeah.
Like it's here yeah. in your mind. So we couldn't write this without thinking in season two, which means book two, right? So we were writing and we were like, oh, 100% this will happen in if it's another book, that's what it will happen. So we have an idea.
Yeah.
But we'll see where it goes.
Well, it was funny because we were like, you know, right now we're getting it set up for television. Mm-hmm. And and when we had the manuscript at first, our manager asked us, oh, what's the second season of the show? And yeah. we're like, there's going to be a second book. That's what the season is, a second book. So we didn't have to come up with it. But then he was like, well, what is it? Yeah. And then it forced us to really, before we had finished the book, really figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And now our entertainment managers, thank you for pushing us because now
we
already know where it's going and mm-hmm. we're super excited about that.
But it's true that now we are fighting to get another contract about a different book.
Yeah, right now we're going for a different contract for a different book. Mm-hmm. And then, but we're open for series, really, I think, on any of them, just depending on how they're received and how excited.
What people think too. We don't yeah. want to do it, you know, and people be like, oh my God, no, 100% this ended. Don't push it. I'm like, okay, we'll not push it.
Yeah, like we want to listen to the people too, right? Because yeah. some people demand a next book and some people just go, you know, I like where, like no one's demanding another drive. Like they're, yeah. okay, it closed off, you know, but. Yeah.
People is demanding a movie.
They're demanding a movie, yeah.
yeah. Yes.
Which is in development, by the way. We just delivered the script.
Awesome.
Yeah.
When I think certain books and or series, in my opinion, it's not necessarily I want another full novel, but I want the story to somehow continue, whether it's a novella, whether it's a short story, but something which leads a little bit into the other topic I wanted to bring up, which is Scythe, because there is the fourth book coming out, Gleanings. And from my understanding, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. From my understanding, it's an anthology. It's a collection of stories.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Yeah, you're right.
So, you're 100% right. So Gleanings says, yeah, it's an anthology collection of short stories. And they're all different characters that were people really excited about in the Scythe world. And, you know, where they come from, maybe an origin story, maybe something that happened to them after the book. And then me and Sophie, we decided to create kind of just a whole new situation. Whole new sites.
Different country, right? Like
different country. It takes place in Barcelona, Spain.
Yeah.
And we follow Saif Gaudi and Saif Dalí. And Saif Gaudi, we believe, is mentioned, or no, Saif Dalí is mentioned once in Saif. So we're like, we're gonna run with that. And and we really came up with an origin story of, you know, their competition against each other and
y La Sagrada Familia.
La Sagrada Familia and again leaning into Sophie's culture and heritage. So
I thought it was interesting to see, you know, sites are everywhere, but what if we take 1 second and we go to another country and see what's going on over there? So that's why we decided to go with that story. And it's like around 40 pages.
Around 40 pages.
Our story.
Okay.
And we're really excited. Yeah. About
and we'll be signing some books So with Neil, my father.
We'll do a little, I think a little bit partial tour with him. Mm-hmm. And we'll be signing books. We'll be signing, you know, we'll be signing those books. Also, I'll be signing some of the other books, Brian Roxy, if they, anyone brings them.
Yeah.
And then we'll be promoting Arcs. Retro. And we'll have Arcs of Retro already.
Oh, nice.
Coming mm-hmm. out, so.
Yeah. Well, we're really excited for Gleanings too, because it's like the first thing together that
yeah,
is going to be out before Retro comes, so people can start to see our style. I mean, obviously it follows the Scythe style, and your father was our editor, kind of like this yes, this no, this yes, this no.
Yeah, and it was difficult because he's very, with that world, it was very difficult to peg that world down because it's so specific, because it's like this utopia where nothing bad can really happen.
Mm-hmm.
So creating conflict in that world was very difficult because obviously all writing is making bad things happen to people to make it interesting. So that was really interesting to do.
I think we push competition. I will say in our story, that's what we push.
Yeah. So it was really interesting and difficult in that sense. Like I worked on Unbound, which is the fifth Unwind book. And I did a short story that was about Roland. Because he was my favorite character in that book. And that was easier because I understood the rules of the world really well. Mm. And even with Scythe, after reading them, and really, it's something clearly that was, my dad is in his brain. his head was in the clouds. His head was in the head. And he created that thing.
Yeah. But I think it's amazing to be part of it. Like, you know, it's a really famous trilogy. I think many people love it and is really happy with it. So have a little bit of Spain, a little bit of Scythe from us, and Penelope is our girl protagonist in the story. I think it's going to be a fun thing to see. It's interesting.
And that book, Scythe, and the whole trilogy is actually in development right now with Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have seen the updates on that, and I am extremely excited.
We are really excited. Hope it works sooner or later. They say every movie takes 10 years on average to get made from the moment it gets bought.
Yeah.
So
how long has it been?
It's been about 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
So, and Dry's been about 3.
Just
so
be patient.
Yeah. We'll be patient.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because like sidetracking a little bit, but like some of my favorite books, the contracts will be bought and then it kind of just sits there. And it never really goes to production. It never really goes and gets further than the rights being bought. And then it'll go back up and it can be bought again. And I'm excited.
While it's sitting there, there's a whole bunch of people in Hollywood like pulling their hair out, calling, stressed out, like trying to make things happen. But for us, we're just like, nothing's happening.
Yeah. It's like, let's go.
Tomorrow, I will act. I will be a Scythe. I don't care.
Honestly, do you need extras? Because I would love to be in it. Thank you. We'll do whatever it takes.
But I think it's going to be really cool to have Scythe. I think your father is going to do a big tour.
Yep. He's doing a really big
starting
tour.
In November. So.
Yeah, he's doing a really big tour.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Well, I know. I'm thankful for where I live because I live in Orange County, and so it's fairly close to where you guys live, which means
I was raised in the where Dry takes place. I was raised in like Mission Viejo. So
okay, mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, as
Mission Viejo,
as the rest say in Orange County.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Yeah, it was. So I can always count on there being at least one tour stop locally.
Yeah, 100%. And we want to say Retro happens in the north of California.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
We just wanted to make sure it was kind of close to Silicon Valley, and we can't say anything else. That's it. That's everything you need to know.
I will have to read the book to find out then.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I did want to ask once, because you mentioned, so the short story in Gleanings, which is the anthology following the Scythe trilogy, the short story was co-written by both of you then.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We wrote it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you, because I know with Retro, you started writing it and kind of with the idea and the process of it in 2019. Did you write the short story before Retro, or did it happen like while you were working on Retro?
Yeah, it was during Retro.
Yeah.
We were at a point where Retro was just about being contracted. We were working on the beginning.
We have already 100 pages, I think.
Yeah, we had 100 pages already, but we were kind of waiting for that moment to really like put the gas on. So we're like, let's just work on this Gleaning short story and really put our heart into that. And it was definitely so worth it.
But at that point, we knew how to work together.
Yeah.
When games came, we were like, oh, let's do this. It's just then I read the books, like reread the books, have it all clear, thinking, yeah, I'm a master. I totally understand this world. And then your father was like, nope, nope. Not in my book, not in my world. I was like, okay. Like, you just need to be the author. Yeah. Have it that clear.
He's the creator of that world that I've realized. Like, as someone who, I feel like I could write anything or any world. And that was the first time I was like, no, I still am having trouble like grasping the rules. Like, it's so complex.
Well, I mean, it is a very complex world because it is a utopian society. It's a dystopian trilogy, but it's set in a utopian society, which there's not a lot of books that do that. I've only read, I know Scythe is one of them, Falling and Uprising by Natalie Camarada is another one. And
the only other one I can think of, A Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. Yeah. Utopia. And that's the thing, all utopian stories are always dystopian stories.
Yeah.
I feel because you're trying to say the point's always perfect isn't perfect. Nothing is perfect, right?
Yeah.
A really utopian book would probably be so boring. A real utopian book.
If it's a true utopian, there would be no book.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing interesting.
Exactly. But yeah, it was interesting because at that point I was working with Gerald. We were writing together Gleanings, but then we have your father as the master, mentor, tutor. So it was like, we write, but then your father was checking, we'll send him the story, he will check back, we were doing it.
He pretty much just worked like an editor would. So mm-hmm. he'd come back, give notes, but not quite like an editor in the sense of making many physical changes.
Towards the very end,
he did a final pass. So it's pretty much like the way our editors work.
Yeah.
Okay. And then from my understanding, it's a few different authors, right? There's a couple others.
Yeah. There are many different authors that are involved.
I know.
That's the funny thing. We didn't meet them yet.
Okay.
Because the pandemic thing, everyone was in a different state. We were at the beginning, we couldn't even leave home, or we needed to be with a mask, right? So it's going to be interesting to meet them. Like, hey, we all belong to the same book. Thank you. I will say thank you to your father. Okay, let's hang out. But we haven't met them yet.
Okay, that was going to be my next question, is if you worked with them or not.
Because it happened with the pandemic, so things got weird. Like, even talking with your father, most of the time we'll need to do it by FaceTime and things like that, or email. Like, we couldn't see him in person. Well, maybe in a different moment, we'll just have a coffee and have a talk, but it was crazy times.
But I mean, writing at a distance, it's not difficult. Like, sometimes we write really well. I mean, we'll just be on FaceTime audio together and we're both in the Google document and it's just like as if she's in the room with me and we're working on it. And sometimes we work really efficiently that way. So
that's true. You just need to get used to write with a person. And I feel with this pandemic, we're doing a podcast right now by Zoom, we all got used to this thing and now we think it's super normal. So good for us.
Which we scheduled through email and DMing. So definitely need technology.
Yeah. I was gonna say, we use social media to do this, which is the whole premise of Retro.
But you know what, like Retro is a book about these people kind of taking a social media diet, but the book is just so about social media. For not being including social media, it actually is so inclusive of it because that's what a lot of the themes are, right? A lot of the messages and things that we talk about, what's life like and who's getting eliminated from the challenge and who's back in it and why technology is super helpful, why technology sometimes can be difficult. And it's usually not technology being bad, it's people, because technology isn't communication.
It's a tool.
It's a way to communicate. And it all comes down to the people who are behind it. So it's like...
And I think that we want to show really clear in Retro that there is a human being behind every screen. And we need to be conscious of it because sometimes we see a screen, we see an app, and we just think it's robots behind, but they're all humans with their heart, their feelings. And that's what we want to show in Retro, right? Like, I feel like part of why the cyberbullying thing at the beginning of the book is because his mother and my mother are teachers. So we talked with them in the past and they were, these things are happening. Like, there's cyberbullying. It's a new thing and it's happening. And we were like, whoa, like, this is serious. It's not one case, one time. No, these things are happening. Like, your mother is a teacher in the United States. My mother is a teacher in Spain. And they both are telling us the same thing. So that's why the whole thing starts with that, because I think almost anyone nowadays knows someone that receives some ugly comments, some hate through social media, something. So we think people is going to connect with that.
I mean, I've seen it. I go on Goodreads and every once in a while I'll see something like, wow, that was that was nice of you. I appreciate that one. I mean, I'm surprised it's not flagged, actually.
Honestly.
Not that I've been like super cyberbullied or anything.
No.
But you can see how people can, you know, there's just the individuation, right? Like you separate people from profiles, and it's you act as if, you know, they say like when you wear glasses or if you put on a certain costume, it's the sensation of you are not you, you are something else, like the Stanford Prison Experiment, for example. Like, and that happens with just a phone.
I mean, if you call yourself Dragon 35, of course you can. Okay, like, tell me your name.
I'm a freaking dragon.
Yeah, like, let's talk with you, Peter. See what's going on. You know, but that's what happened. And listen, maybe Dragon 35 is an amazing person, but at the same time, that helps you to cover yourself and being another person. And it's like, do whatever, but please, like, there is a human being reading that comment, you know, and be careful with it.
And, you know, sometimes, too, the cyberbullying isn't just blatant. It's not just people going, ha, 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 you're stupid. No. It's not always that. Sometimes it's masked by concern, right? Like in our book, the bullying goes viral, the cyberbullying goes viral. And then
because
a lot
the
of
algorithm.
People, and because the algorithm. And a lot of people are concerned and, you know, oh, somebody needs to get her help, you know, get her help. And it's like, let's help her. And they put a drug and alcohol addiction, you know, hotline number on her page. And it's just, you know, all these different types of things happen, and that person's hurt by that because she's like, no, I'm fine, and I don't need that kind of help. So a lot of it's mass and concern, some of it's people trying to help, sometimes it's people who are just bad actors. But
well, sometimes you do what happened in retro. I don't want to go deep about it, but you sometimes can bully without knowing it.
Yeah.
And that's something that happens. And that's what is really complicated, because you can say something and you don't even know you're hurting someone. And then you hurt, it goes viral. You didn't want that at all. And now you're feeling horrible, but now it's viral and you can't do anything about it. It's in Silicon Valley, you know, like
that happens
in the clouds somewhere.
That's what happens to Luna.
And that's what happens to Luna.
It's kind of all her fault what happens in that sense. And it's like, you know, they say most bullies, a large percentage of them, I don't remember the number exactly, but it was like 8 out of 10 or something, don't even know they're bullies. And in this case, she's aware of what she did, but it's, sometimes bullying isn't just black and white. Sometimes there's conflict and then it gets out of hand. Or sometimes it's, she thinks she's doing the right thing, but in a heated moment, she posts the wrong thing that she shouldn't have posted. Maybe it's an embarrassing photo or a retweet or whatever, and then it can go viral. So, you know, it's not black and white. And we want to show all those colors and just do it in a really realistic way. That was the goal.
Yeah.
So you're kind of seeing the story through the eyes of like maybe the person that was a part of that bullying.
Without knowing it, wanting it, or even expecting to do that.
Who's a good soul?
Yeah. No, that's true. I know even on TikTok, with posting videos, if someone makes a comment, I generally speaking, I never take something negatively. I always look at it like, okay, what were they trying to say? And I feel like sometimes I will take a comment like, oh, that's a really good point. Thank you for letting me know. Like, let me, and I will use the comment to kind of open a discourse about what they said and say like, hey, I didn't know this, and talk a little bit about it, but I'm always worried about what if someone takes this as I am bashing them for what they said or trying to throw shade their way. And it's always kind of having to double and triple think. And sometimes I'll send things to people and be like, hey, can you proof, like, watch this and make sure it sounds okay, just by the off chance that someone could take offense to it.
Yeah, we are many people with our different fears and insecurities. So we always like to, actually, in the book, we love to talk with our friends, like, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Because I think the more the better, you know, like, to know the opinions. And I feel with social media, sometimes we can't know the tone. It's just a text. It's just iMessage. It's just an Instagram DM. So it's complicated. If we all will hear how we say the things, probably will be easier. But that's how it works. So we need to be careful, all of us.
Yeah. And then I wanted to ask to Jared specifically, with, because Retro is your co-writing with Sophia, but you have two other books out. You have Dry and you have Roxy, and you co-wrote those with your father. Was the experience of co-writing with your father compared to co-writing with Sophia different, and how was it different?
No, completely different. Completely different. I mean, with my dad, it was like I started writing because he was a writer, more or less. So I kind of learned by, hey, dad, is this good? And I'd give him 10 pages that I wrote, and he'd give me 10 pages of notes. And so it was kind of like a father-son mentor-mentee situation.
Okay.
So I also learned a lot from him. So my style was, I could emulate his style really well. And that was really second nature because I kind of grew up with that. So when it came to writing those books with him, it was really easy to do to cohesively, you know, come together, because the style that I was doing, which was similar to his, it was kind of all I really knew. And then now writing with Sophie is this kind of explosion of different styles, different ways to be.
She's voice.
I mean, she's a different, you know, from a different culture.
Different culture, different religion,
different language. I mean, you can't get to, you know, further life experiences in that sense. So it was eye-opening in creating a new voice that's uniquely ours. And the process is completely different too. The process is much more integrated. I would say with my dad, it would be he'll write one chapter, I'll write another chapter, and then some light notes. With us, it's just, we do it all together.
Yeah.
So very different, very, very different. And very rewarding to be writing with my partner. And we just grow closer, like the more that we write. Because it's such a crazy experience, but it's just worth it.
That's awesome. Well, and like you said earlier, you learn a lot more about each other while you're writing.
Oh, 100%. Now I know what he will do if he was in an island and, you know, dinosaurs were alive. Like, I know everything. We're at that point right now.
So I have one more question for both of you. And this can be a little bit of a difficult question. What are your top three all-time favorite novels that you've read?
Okay, I have a problem with this question because one of them is a Spanish novel and I don't even know how to translate that in English.
That's fine.
It came in English, so I can't talk about it. It's just I read a lot in Spanish in the past because that's when I grew up, right? It makes sense, like a lot of Spanish authors. I'm going to say that the most recent one that I have read, that I was like, oh my God, but it's just going to sound like, who doesn't? But I read The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. And I know everyone has read it, and to me, I'm probably late already to that, but I just thought it was amazing what she did.
Yeah.
I just think it was brilliant, you know, how she was able to tell the story and I mean, seven husbands, and you still, you know, it's about the love of her life and the way they present love there is a really romantic idea of love that I agree.
Yeah.
And I really think that if you love someone, no, doesn't matter what things happen, like you have a place in your heart for that person. So I really, 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 really enjoy that one.
For me, I would say like, going back, I really, for YA, and I don't even know if this is YA, I'm not sure, but I read it when I was a teenager. It's called House of the Scorpion by Nancy Farmer. It's a really, really good book that I loved growing up. And then I love, as far as other books, I love Kurt Vonnegut. So I'm a super huge fan of Kurt Vonnegut. His voice is just crazy and out there, from Breakfast of Champions to Slapstick. I grew up with my dad's books, so I can't say that I didn't feel like a really influential one for me was Unwind. I just loved that book growing up. I was around like 12 when he wrote it. When he wrote the first one, when he was just getting working on it, or maybe like 13. So he ran by a lot of things to me in the book, like, hey, what do you think about this? And that kind of piqued my interest in becoming a writer. So I have to say that's in one of my favorites because, you know, so selfishly I had a piece of kind of being involved with that. Like
how humble.
He had this scene of Roland, had this scene where, a character is getting unwound and he was like, I can't do it, I can't write it, I'm just gonna skip over and just say it happened. I was like, Dad, I got mad at him. I was like, are you kidding me? You have to show it. Like, you're writing a disturbing book, like you're writing books that are more adult as we get adult. Like, you have to show it, so we showed it. and it turned out to be a scene that I just loved and fell in love with. So there's that. And then I would also say, I think I'm doing four, but whatever. I love Hemingway. I'm just like, there's something about that old romance, whether it be like Fiesta or Old Man in the Sea. digest.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just fell in love with that romance of Europe and the old days.
And I think that for me, the books depend which mood I am. I used to have books from, like, I would read different things when I was at school or when I was in summer vacations or when I was in Christmas vacations.
Yeah.
I don't know if that happened to other people, but it's just my mood and my sensations change. In summer, I like lighter things. Like, I just feel the vibe. I'm at the beach. I want a different thing. But in winter, I want to get dark and have my tea and be like, yeah, I'm part of all these things.
That's when she turns into Dragon 35.
That's how it always works for me. You know, in Spain we have four seasons. It's not like in California.
Yeah,
you have hot summer and cold summer, basically.
Yeah. And then you have a war season, and that's it.
And then we have fire season.
Fire season, a war season. That's it.
Yeah. So I do want to go back really quick, because you said that some of your favorite novels are Spanish, and so they haven't necessarily been translated to English. Mm-hmm. What are they? Like, would you be willing to tell us a little bit about them?
One that is called Los Renglones Torcidos de Dios. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting because the author, went to he went to a mental hospital and got locked down for like a month to write the book. And the book is about this, let's say, detective that has to go to this mental institution to resolve a crime. So knowing that he went there and how he's really well explained how it works, the place, how is the people, it is really interesting to see how he humanized people. Like, you know, many people think, like, oh, mental institution, almost like they are not humans. And it's like, no, everyone has feelings and has like, it's really, it's hard. Because it's a hard book, but at the same time, it has a pureness and a beautiful thing about it that I really, really like how that guy did it. So I really, really appreciate that one. And then obviously when I was a teenager, I love things like The Hunger Games. And I mean, you know what I'm going to say? I love Twilight. I love Hunger. I love Harry Potter. I read them all.
She has a Harry Potter hat. She has a Harry Potter jacket. She has a Slytherin tie.
Yeah, okay. I was in a bachelor party like a month ago in Spain with my friends. We are all like, you know, I wasn't getting married. Like, one of my friends were like, she's going to be Dumbledore and we're all going to be students. Why not? So we all dress like that. And nothing to be ashamed of. I love it. I love it and I keep loving it. I don't care. So yeah.
She's a Slytherin.
Yeah, I'm a Slytherin. That's true. But no, hey, don't judge.
I'm a Gryffindor. Slytherin, it can be good.
I have read a little bit of everything, right? But I love this kind of, what they are called, like bestsellers that we all know and people love them at the same time they criticize them, but it's like, I love them.
That's awesome. Well, thank you both so much for joining this episode of the podcast and talking about Retro. I know I am super excited for its release. I know it comes out in just a few months and I'm sure everyone else is equally excited, but thank you so much again for joining.
Thank you so much for having us. And we can't wait to see you in whatever signing or whatever events events or whatever.
We're neighbors.
Like festivals. Yeah, we're neighbors.
Please, people, follow us in social media.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for that.
We are on TikTok and Instagram. And we're
at Sophie and Jared for any like fun, awesome, stupid, hilarious, boring, but probably more interesting.
More interesting.
Pictures, videos, things, content, updates, you know, sneak peeks. Yeah. We're always like super engaged. We're always engaging with people.
And we're going to be doing giveaways about retro arts. Like, it's going to be a lot of cool stuff going on.
Thank you so much for listening. I really hope you enjoyed this interview. I had such a pleasure talking with Jared and Sophia. They were amazing and hysterical, and I cannot wait to meet them when they go on tour, not only for the book Gleanings with Neil Schusterman, Jared's father, but also for their novel Retro, which we just learned all about. I have yet to read this novel. That being said, at the time of me posting this podcast, I have now received an advanced reader copy for Retro, and I'm happy to report that I will be starting to read this book very, very soon. So stay tuned for a review from me. If you want to pre-order this novel, you can go to bookshop.org, click the link below. It'll take you and you can pre-order it. And if you do, don't forget to submit your receipt so you get some extra free goodies. Don't forget to come back for more. I have another interview with an amazing author coming in just a couple of weeks.